Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. I'm Victor Mandolia.
And I'm Debbie Mayer.
And we are here in the studio, and we have by phone Zephyr Teachout, who is running for Congress in the New York 19. Zephyr, you're there, right?
I am here, and it's wonderful to be back on the show.
Yeah, we're happy to have you back.
Hello, Zephyr.
So the race is heating up, and there's a lot going on. You announced only, I guess, 8 days ago or something, right?
Yeah. 8 days ago, yes.
Right.
It's been an amazing 8 days. It's actually gone even better than we could have imagined.
So a lot of our listeners know who you are and know that you ran for governor against Governor Cuomo last year in the Democratic primary. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll talk a little bit about why you're running for Congress.
Yeah, sure. And actually, thank you for having me on the show, because I think some of the reasons that the listeners know who I am is because of being able to come on this show. So
thanks for that.
Good. Thank you.
Since we have a little time, and we have a long time in this campaign, you know, several months. It's not like the gubernatorial race, which was actually only 3 months long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually am delighted to get the chance to introduce more about myself than the anti-corruption part, which you may know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a law professor at Fordham. I live in Dover Plains, and I'm from rural Vermont. It's a town about 2 hours northeast of the district, of the 19th district, mm-hmm. Which is a new district. Your listeners should look online at the map. It's a big, diverse, beautiful district.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is a judge. My dad is also a law professor, so I clearly followed in
those. Runs in the family.
Yeah. And
often does, right?
Yes. I actually have a bunch of siblings. I have 4 siblings. Two of them are also lawyers.
Huh.
I was a teenager in the 80s during the dairy crisis, the farm crisis.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our neighbors were dairy farmers, and really was impacted by seeing that our world, the agricultural world, no longer be able to survive in the same way and find new ways in which to build an economy.
Mm-hmm.
I went to college, and my first job out of college was I was a special education teacher's aide in a small rural public school, and education has been really important to me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a lawyer, and in the last, really, for most of my career, I have been fighting against big money in politics, really working to rebuild an economy and a democracy that works for all people, not mm-hmm. just the wealthy and well-connected.
So and what was interesting about your race for governor was that your message really caught fire. I mean, you won most of the counties upstate and some dramatically. I mean, in this county, in Columbia County, you took 74% of the vote.
Yes.
So
yes.
It seems like the message, I mean, there's a couple of things going on in the governor's race, of course. So, you know, you've been a strong advocate for education and against Common
yeah.
Core, which was a big deal. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. And then please tell us also, like, what did the governor's race, what did you learn from it? Like, what came out of it for you, and how did you recover? Because I know it was a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's the opposite. I loved it so much. I never recovered.
Political junkie you are.
it's funny because I've been writing about politics, and I've worked on campaigns my whole life. But it was really pretty inspiring to be a candidate. I've been writing about how corrupting politics is, and mm-hmm. the part you don't realize is how much it actually brings out, and you get to see this incredible activism and organizing that never gets any credit.
Mm-hmm.
You meet the most extraordinary
mm-hmm.
people
mm-hmm.
who you might see in the grocery store, and you have no idea that 4 days a week they are coming together to work on some really important local issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, really inspiring. I ran initially. I was recruited to run in that race because of corruption in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of a failed promise to deal with corruption in Albany. I think we've seen in the last year that we still have a problem of corruption in Albany.
Yeah.
That's not funny. That's quite serious. It affects people's lives in a very real way.
Right.
And they still walk with a pension.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they still get away with their pensions.
Unbelievable.
And New York has its own. I call it our own private Citizens United, where corporations mm-hmm. can directly donate to campaigns. You don't even need to do the independent expenditure you do under federal law. We should obviously mm-hmm. get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, any campaign is bigger than the corruption issue, and there were two other features of the campaign that were really, really critical. I mean, there were some others as well, but one was this extraordinary network of activists fighting for clean water and a clean New York, the otherwise known as the Fractivists.
Right.
it's a really amazing community because it didn't come from a national organizing. It was local people and local communities coming together, holding lots of educational forums so that people could really understand as much as they needed to the science and the economics and the impacts of fracking. And that became a really important feature of the campaign. A second really important feature was this beautiful network of teachers and parents who have really been shut out of the political conversation about education, which is kind of upside down. You know, you'd think you'd start with teachers and parents.
Right.
But but I, like most people, I think, was initially attracted to the idea of Common Core. High standards is important. We need to expect a lot and provide a lot of support. But in practice, I think I first heard several years ago from a woman who said, my son now cries every time he comes home from school because he's so anxious about the tests. Mm-hmm. But in practice, Common Core has meant high-stakes testing, teacher performance, and teacher pay based on how well the kids are doing in school, and none of the supports that you need, the resources that you need to actually provide good teaching. So that was another total grassroots, you know, not from the top, not national, total grassroots effort that became critical in my campaign. And I would say, you know, there were some other pillars as well, the past public employees, but those three were really, really important. And I think that's important because since then, after the gubernatorial campaign, I lost. Despite winning the overwhelming number of counties in the 19th, I've actually stayed very close to those communities. So if you think of the campaign as having these three pillars, education, renewable energy, and corruption, I did a tour a couple years ago talking about the corruption in our politics and what we could do about it related to a book I came out with recently, mostly in the 19th district. I did another tour that was more than a tour because we did a lot of follow-up, recruiting teachers to run for office.
Great.
I'm really excited about seeing teachers actually holding elected office and having those voices, and parents having those voices in the policy discussions instead of outside protesting.
Right.
And that's also important to me because of...
inside and outside strategy works.
Exactly.
You know, protests matched with working on the inside to change things, it's what works.
Right.
No, Victor, I totally agree with you. You have to do both.
It can't be one or the other.
And getting more women to run for office. So the advantage of recruiting teachers and parents is I was also recruiting men, but that we still need a lot more women in office. And then you remember Josh Fox? Have you guys had him on the show?
I don't think we've had Josh, but Josh is the producer and director, or just the director of Gasland and Gasland 2, and which was a big turning point in the fracking movement, anti-fracking movement.
Mm. Yeah. So after fracking was banned in New York, Josh and I and four other people started doing programs with the fractivist groups talking about let's move beyond stopping bad technologies and move towards encouraging good technologies. Mm-hmm. So we called it the Solutions Grassroots Tour. And it was basically a 2.5 hour show with some beautiful music by Bethany Yarrow and some technicians and Josh and I talking about the politics and the technology that is available to us right now without any new inventions that we can have move towards 100% renewable energy. So I've sort of continued the work. You know, you talked about outside inside, Victor.
It's continued to do what
I would like to do as a congresswoman, which is raise up the voices of people whose voices are shut out and figure out solutions to these, you know, crisis-level problems in our society.
Great. Okay, just to remind everybody, this is At Issue, and Victor Mandolia and I, Debbie Mayer, are here with Zephyr Teachout.
Who's on the phone.
Who's on the phone. Yeah, we're here voice-wise.
And we're having a great connection.
If
we lose you, you'll just ring us back.
Right. So do you want to give us the elevator reason?
It's all about the connection.
Right. Okay.
That's MH Cable's tagline, so we won't go there.
Oh, let's not go there. No.
Or they say all the best connections. Okay.
Okay.
It's a little off.
So that's great background. Do you want to give us the elevator answer of why you're running for this office, which is, you know, you've got two flights with somebody, and they say, why are you running? And you say?
I'm running to fight to stand up against the political insiders and big corporations and raise up voices to get drowned out. When I've been traveling around the district recently and over the past few years, people are looking for someone who is not afraid to stand up and speak out.
That is not important. You dropped out for a second. Yeah. That is not what?
Oh yes, is not afraid to stand up and raise up their voices.
Right.
90%, 80%, the numbers switch around depending on the week, but of the job of a congressperson,
right.
Whatever party they're in, is constituent service and helping with the local problems and elevating local opportunities. It's not a partisan job. It is actually raising up people's voices and saying, okay, here we can really focus on solar solutions. In this area, we're having real problems with the way a federal program is being implemented. I think of that as the core of the job. I when I was thinking about running, besides talking to voters, I also talked to Maurice Hinchey's old chief of staff and other people who've worked, including Congress members who've worked in Congress about not the flashy part, but the day-to-day work of being a Congress member. And that's what it is. And then there's other things that are clear national level crisis, including corruption, energy, and I think education. There's something else that is really important to me. I've actually been working on a book on this that my editor would probably prefer that I not put on hold. I've been working about the importance of a small business economy to democracy and ways in which we can actually do a lot more to support a real small business economy.
How do you see that changing and being able to implement something for the better?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the problems, and then we'll get to the solutions. FDR, an essential part of the New Deal that's often overlooked, is this complete commitment, especially in the second half of his presidency, after dealing with the crisis, how do we build a new economy, a real commitment to a small business economy. And there were a few different parts of that. One was a commitment to antitrust, to breaking up companies that had become so big that they basically drowned out and pushed out the entrepreneur and the small business owner. And we lost that in the early 80s. We basically lost antitrust, and companies are so large now that they're not really part of the market. They just own the market.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly see that in the cable and telecom area, for instance.
Right.
And you feel it on your local bill.
Sure.
Because you're paying a lot, and you may not be getting very good service, but you don't have a choice.
Yep.
That's something that the FDR administration was committed to fighting against. And it's actually something that's been really lost in our political conversation. It's reviving now.
Mm-hmm.
So as in Congress, as a Democrat, I'm not going to promise you a chicken in every pot. But I can say that I will be talking about those cable bills and those phone bills and fighting, standing up to big cable, because that's what I've done before. On a national level, I've already been very involved in fighting for net neutrality and standing up to Comcast and Time Warner.
Right.
The other part of that is related
to shout, Zephyr. The train is coming.
Sorry?
We have a train coming by, so it gets a little loud.
But
just keep talking.
Yep.
People still hear you.
It's a wonderful sound.
I think so, too.
There's that wonderful song, Lord, I'm a Fool for a Lonesome Train. I love it.
But go on.
So net neutrality is a big part of what you do.
Do you want to talk about the other part of small business?
Yeah.
Yes.
The sort of other overarching part of it. Is the other part of it is access to being able to take out a loan. And I sometimes call this the $64,000 challenge. You guys remember the $64,000
Yeah, I do, yes.
Well, I know of it.
Yeah.
Is the train almost gone?
Yeah, right. It's past us. So
speaking of voices getting drowned out.
Really?
And when I talk to small business owners, there's a lot of red tape issues. They're concerned about their taxes, but they also don't have an easy way to get the $64,000 loan to redo the patio,
right?
In a restaurant, or make some important but minor change and investment in that company that will make that company, allow that company to thrive. So if you're a big company, you can get a $2 million loan. But if you're looking for that small business loan, our current policy is basically entrepreneurs going to debt. Use your credit card. And that's not a sustainable policy. And that's a big reason why we've seen if you look at the numbers, actually, although there are a lot of sole proprietors, the number of business owners who have employees, that the true job creators with two or three employees, seven or eight employees, has been declining for a while. And Elizabeth Warren and others in the post-2008 crash have really focused on this, the importance of making sure that it's not just the big guys who have access to loans. And I would be really proud to join those who are standing up for the small business owner.
And are you talking about amping up the SBA, or is it or creating something new? Or do you think there's a fix for the Small Business Administration?
Yeah, well, so there's different aspects of it. It's a great question. So part of it is, the SBA needs a lot of work. And I don't know if you saw the news just today about the SBA and also SBA and women-owned companies and a recent research that wasn't just about the SBA, but about women-owned companies being less likely to get federal contracts, which is a separate issue and something I care about a lot. But the other aspect of it is basically when we bail out big banks and allow them to take enormous risks at taxpayer expense, we're saying you as a bank played a central public function, and we need you around. We can't just let you collapse. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're bailing out these big banks, they should be lending to the entrepreneurs and small business owners in our communities.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that FDR understood. And again, it's a tough moment right now because our economy is so unequal and it's bifurcating so quickly between the haves and the have-nots. And that's a real problem. It's a real problem in throughout the 19th District. You certainly see it in Columbia. But the exciting part of the moment is more and more people are speaking out. More and more voices are being lifted up who have a different model of how we could relate to the banking sector.
So I know that we were looking at the whole hour. It seems like you have about 30 minutes to 40 minutes. So before we get too much further, there's a couple of things that I think are important that people want to know about. So much has been made of your relatively recent move to the district. So I would like to maybe you could explain a little bit about you know how your strategy to win in the district. Secondly, in today's Register Star, you have issued a proposal to keep dark money out of this race. And if you could tell us a little bit about that proposal and if you've gotten any answers.
Sure. So let's see. For the first question, you want me to speak to your listeners as a strategist?
I mean, well, speak as a person. You know, speak as who you know. I mean, yeah. you seem like a very honest and very upfront person. So you know, this is clearly an issue in the district. How do you address it?
Yeah. So I've looked at this district. I know I can win this district. Kirsten Gillibrand got 63% of this district in 2012. We know that this district has an incredibly strong independent streak, that Republicans will vote for Democrats, Democrats will vote for Republicans. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unaffiliated voters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
People vote for the person, which is actually a lot like the community where I grew up, where people didn't actually even register Republican or Democrat. They just voted for the person.
Right.
They
and,
do that here, too.
What I hear when I go around the district is what people care the most about is somebody who will listen, understand, and fight for them and not be afraid. When I look at the map, I see a lot of areas of really exciting potential support, including in the teachers, independent teachers, unaffiliated teachers, and Republican teachers and parents who care a lot about education policy. I think that's going to be an important network. It's one that I love. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of having robo-college district to tell people that they had a constitutional right to opt out of high stakes testing and to support them in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other pockets. It's certainly the incredible community of people who are fighting for and believe in and know how to get to the Hudson Valley being the renewable energy center and moving away from fossil fuels. That's going to be an incredible community. And then the independent and unaffiliated and Republican voter whose biggest concern is integrity and biggest concern is corruption. And I've been fighting corruption for really my whole life, which relates then to our and I'll come back on the show we have a lot more issues we can talk about.
Definitely.
But that relates to something I care a lot about. Last week I announced and this week I have asked my fellow candidates, Republicans and Democrats, to join me in a commitment to try to keep dark money, super PAC money, out of the 19th district. So there's a lot of talk about, I have a few more minutes here, so
good. Okay.
If it's okay, I'll explain the
Please.
Pledge. And
yeah.
Okay, great. So the truth is no candidate can say, legally at least, hey, super PAC, come into my district and help me out. Or, on the other hand, you can't tell the super PAC to go away because the whole idea of a super PAC, honored in the breach by some candidates, Fiorina. The whole idea of a super PAC is that it is actually independent spending, that the Supreme Court said it's okay if corporations spend an unlimited amount of money as long as it's not in a conversation with the candidate.
Not controlled by the candidate. Or
Right. So then the puzzle is, what if you want to have a race without any super PAC money? And super PAC money doesn't do any voter in the district any good because it's hugely wealthy individuals, overwhelmingly male, who are spending money in order to drown out voters' voices. Like, that's the point. The point is to have more power and to shut down.
Blitz with ads and often skewed and, you know, some not even factual and usually inflammatory in some way and lots of accusations and of misdeeds and
things. Exactly, yeah. So take a minute. Your listeners should all take a minute and think of the worst thing that they have never done, not the worst thing they have ever done, the thing they haven't done, and imagine unlimited spending, telling everybody in the district that that's who you are. That's super PACs. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. It's very negative, and it's a lot of money, and it's not doesn't help. Like, real conversations. Like, how do we transition to renewable energy? What should we do about education? Which I actually have a lot of faith people can come together on without the outside money, because they can have real conversations.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners will are familiar with, like, the energy voter commercials, which I think are so bizarre. It's like, I'm an energy voter. I have more oil, more gas. You know, it's like it, of course, is funded by the fossil fuel industry. It's you know, it's not complicated to figure out, but it's like, you know, it's bizarre to me.
It is. And, you know, we have really low voter turnout here. It's not a surprise when people feel like the ads don't make sense and they're not representing us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here's what Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown did in 2012.
Okay.
I don't know if your listeners remember this, but it's very exciting. They together developed a contract where they agreed, neither of us want super PAC money in our race. We want to have a open debate. So anytime there's a super PAC spending on your behalf, Scott Brown, you have to pay a penalty to me, actually to a charity of my choice. So if I'm a Scott Brown super PAC, and feel free to ask questions about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get grasp because it could bankrupt a campaign in a way.
Right.
So the basic idea is, if I'm a Scott Brown super PAC, nobody's a super PAC, that's part of the Supreme Court's problem in Citizens United, is we're not companies, we're not super PACs, we're people. If I am a billionaire Scott Brown a supporter, right now, without the pledge, I'd say I'll go spend $1 billion in the 2012 Senate race. If I've made this agreement with Elizabeth, if Brown and Warren had made this agreement, the billionaire said, every time I spend money, it hurts my candidate.
So that's,
I'm not going to spend money.
Yeah, so that makes sense. Because the thing is, if somebody came in and spent $100 million, the campaign would owe $50 million in penalties, basically. So okay, now I get it. The article in the Register Star didn't really explain. It cited that piece of the agreement, but it didn't really explain that it's really meant as a poison pill in a way. Like, it's like don't spend it, because you can't force them not to spend the money.
Can't.
So it's like a penalty. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and the effect was they didn't actually get rid of all dark money. Like, but the effect is they got rid of 93%, according to some estimate.
Wow.
So that they had a campaign where the issues were debated, and the debates really mattered. And the issues really matter. And so that is what, I put this offer out. It takes a while to negotiate a pledge. Mm-hmm. It's it's a serious contract. And as a law professor, my students have looked into this. We just asked the other candidates a couple days ago, whether they'd be interested. So I'm going to give all the candidates a little while to think it through. Because
yeah, well, the Register Star article already quotes candidate John Faso, who is accusing you of walking all over the First Amendment. And I wanted to know how you would respond to that.
I actually
have you seen the article yet?
Hear you.
Oh,
okay. I can't hear you, but I have heard that, I mean, I have heard, we got a letter from, I haven't heard, got any direct communication from any of the other candidates, but the letter we got from Faso was disappointing because it just flat out refused the pledge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm hoping mm-hmm. the other candidates will follow up. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of over the next few weeks reaching out because, you know, maybe FAFSA would reconsider if all the other candidates uh-huh. said, you know, we really don't want any dark money.
Right.
Right.
So I'm not going to, just because one candidate has rejected it, I'm not going to stop looking for this. And I wanted to get it out there early so that mm-hmm. we had the time and the candidates really had the time to understand the details.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be so exciting. It'd be so exciting if we had a...
Well, it'd be great to see a clean race. Wouldn't it be amazing?
Yeah
it would be amazing. Wow.
So,
and I've got about 2 more minutes.
Okay.
But I promise I'll come back on.
All right, great.
Okay,
and we appreciate your time. We understand that that you are busy and crazy out there. You, how many? So it's 11 counties. How many have you been to? Have you and what's the next few weeks like for you?
In the last couple weeks, I've been to 9 of them, and I'll be in Montgomery. I don't have my calendar in front of me.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm in sort of a constant cycle through the counties.
Right.
It is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible district.
Yes.
It's a stunning, every part of it is beautiful. So except for the absence of cell service.
Right.
Oh, that, yeah.
the driving around is wonderful, and I, my real focus now is we'll do a few. We're doing some meet and greets, but actually a lot of the focus is private or small meetings, and then cold calling, just talking to voters from across the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And really listening to the different issues. I had a nice meeting the other day with four or five voters, and just talking about this is actually why Verizon is on my mind. Talking about phone bills and service, and the real impact that has on people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Living with not very high incomes.
Right.
So I feel like the first job of being a candidate is the same as the first job of being a congresswoman, which is spending a lot of time listening to the local concerns and really trying to think through what you could do about that in Washington.
Right. Do you, you mentioned Verizon and the cost of service. So you think that the Lifeline program is doing what it needs to do, or is there more to do? Which
I
basically
will be
gives
coming out with,
people.
Yeah, I'll be coming out, I think I told you before is, or maybe I haven't said on the program, is that I have thoughts on Lifeline and other programs. I'm going to be laying out all my policy in a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a big campaign kickoff, but for now, I'm really focusing on listening and hearing what other people think.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. We've been listening and speaking with Zephyr Teachout, who is the candidate for the 19th Congressional District, a Democrat running here in in Columbia County, Greene County, and nine other
counties.
So
yes.
We really appreciate your time. Thank you. Thanks so much. And
it's
we look forward to more conversation.
Thanks for being flexible.
Great to see you.
You bet.
We'll be
thank
in touch.
You, Zephyr.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.